Hello, everybody. Today is Saturday, 1st of February, 2025. We are gathered here today for the 169th session of Mindfulness for Beginners in English, conducted by Nisala Nuwaneya. And I'd like to warmly welcome Venerable Homagama Dhamma Kusala Mahathero, who's always encouraging us for this program. And would like to help us today as well. I would warmly like to welcome all the people who are participating via Zoom, Facebook live stream, or anyone who may be watching later on. Our program will, as usual, commence with the in-session practice of mindfulness, followed by the talk on today's topic by Venerable Banthe, and lastly, we will have time for any reports that you have sent to us to present to Banse and then any questions. So to begin today's session, I would like to invite Homagama Dhamma Kusala Thero to start today's mindfulness session.
Okay, everyone, welcome to another program. Now, today as the activity, we'll do something related to the topic that we are about to discuss. For this, you need a piece of paper and a pen. So if you can quickly gather it, then we can start on the activity. Okay, everyone, so this activity is related to the topic that we are going to discuss today. It's a fresh topic, and the topic is cognitive behavioral therapy. We are not professionals, but we will discuss this topic, making its connection into the mindfulness. Related to mindfulness, we will discuss, and we can do this activity as well. For this, you need to create, let's say, some kind of a flow chart, right? The first box, it would be the trigger. The second box would be thoughts. You can create a flow chart. The first one is the trigger. Then the arrow goes to the second one. That's thoughts. Third one would be feelings. Then the fourth box would be behavior. First box, trigger. Arrow goes to the second box, thoughts. Another arrow goes to the third box, feelings. The final box is behavior. Can someone show the flow chart just to make sure that we got it correctly? Arosh, yes. If you can hold it closer. Yep. Right. So that's the idea. Now, when it comes to cognitive behavioral therapy, the basic idea behind it is that the way we think, it'll change or it'll affect the way we feel and the way we behave. Our thoughts will affect feelings and behaviors, right? So that's the logic behind this. Cognitive is the basically thinking process. So when we say cognitive, it's going to examine the thoughts or the things that you think, right? Then when you say behavioral, it's going to examine the things that you do. Then therapy part comes, try to analyze these things and try to change these behaviors for the better. It's more like a talking therapy, right? So we will try to identify some of our behaviors based on this flow chart, right? We can try and identify our own behaviors. You might have to reflect on yourself a little and Let's try to identify at least like 3, 4, 5 behavior patterns of ours, right? So I'll give you an example. First one, when we say trigger, let's say I am calling somebody, a friend maybe, and that person didn't answer the phone, right? So that's the incident, that's the trigger, right? Then thoughts come, thoughts follow. I might get thoughts that this person is, you know, ignoring me. Maybe they have some historical issue. I might recall some historical issue, and I might start thinking that this person is ignoring me, not answering my calls. So that's the second box, thought patterns. Then the feeling. What are the feelings? I might feel frustrated that this friend is ignoring me. I might feel sad, right? And then the behavior. Behavior, I might, you know, withdraw myself. Not go to, you know, functions. Not go to among people, friends. I might withdraw myself as a result. So you can see a simple trigger, day-to-day trigger, somebody not answering my call. Then thoughts follow. Then the feelings arise. Then finally, the behavior according to those patterns, right? So this is an example that I gave. So the task or the activity is to figure out on your own life, reflect on your own life, and figure out 3, 4, at least like 3 similar patterns in yourself, right? If you can find more, then it would be better. For the latecomers, we are in an activity. We do this activity based on the cognitive behavioral therapy. Arosh, if you can just show the flowchart again. So we have created the flowchart ourselves. The first one would be the trigger. The second would be the thoughts, feelings, behavior. Right? So this we are going to reflect on ourselves and identify at least three behavioral patterns of each of us. Right? And the trigger, simple thing, somebody missing my call, not answering my call, right? That's the trigger. Then the thoughts rush. Maybe I think that, you know, this person is ignoring me. Then I might think about some past incident. And I might think that's why this person is not talking to me, ignoring me, right? Then the third would be the feelings. I might feel frustrated, I might feel sad, right? Those are the feelings. Then the final, the behavior. Behavior, I might, you know, withdraw myself. I might not go to the occasions that, you know, these people or the friends are participating, right? So you can see there's a trigger, thoughts, feelings, and behavior. Right, so we are going to reflect on ourselves and find at least like three similar patterns in us. Do we need more time?
I've managed 3, Pante.
Okay, right. So there's a remaining part in this activity. The second part would be how to change our thoughts and how to change our feelings and behaviors, right? Now, for example, if we take that first trigger that I gave the example, that somebody not answering my call, right? So in that trigger happens. The same trigger happens, but instead of the usual thought patterns, intentionally, consciously try to harbor happy thoughts. Let's say instead of thinking this person is ignoring me, we can replace those thoughts with maybe this person is busy. He's doing this job. He's working for so many hours. So that's why he didn't answer me. Right? So replacing with happy thoughts. Then what will happen? Instead of frustration, instead of sadness, the feelings might change. Right? You can replace those with appropriate feelings. Then the final one, the behavior also changes, because now you don't have reasons to, you know, ignore or withdraw yourself. Right? So whatever the examples that you figured out, you can replace them with happy thoughts, and that would be the second part of the activity. If you are done, it would be nice to share with the group. If you use the Zoom hand, we can allow you to unmute. Instead of sharing all three, maybe we'll go with one. One of the patterns that you have identified, and the pattern with the happy thoughts. Yes, Arush.
Thank you, Bhante. So yeah, I'll give one of the examples. So the trigger was that when my daughter doesn't call when she gets to school, so I drop her off usually some distance away from the school, and I expect her to give me a call when she's safely at the school. So the thought that arises when the call doesn't come is she okay? Did she get to school safely? And that it comes then with a feeling of anxiety and a behavior that I should call the school to find out. So that's the kind of default behavior. And then the change is, rather than thinking, is she okay? I would think that she'll be fine. She does it every day, and that the school will let me know if there is a need. So just remembering the hundreds of positive examples that nothing bad has happened, and not worrying about the possibility of a bad thing. And so that leads to feelings of contentment about this event and the ability to carry on with my day.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think most of us would be facing such situations, right? When it comes to the family members, when it comes to important people in your life, you always worry about the safety of them, right? And let's say that negative thought pattern Arosh mentioned, if it continues every day, this happening once is fine. But what happens is that if it continues every day, then it becomes a habit, right? It's like it becomes a habit, and you are always worrying about it. You are always anxious due to this. Probably early morning, you'll be anxious those couple of hours, right? So you can see this happening once is fine, but gradually it becomes a habit. So negative habit, negative pattern is there. Let's say the happy one, it's not easy to replace that, especially when it comes to, you know, safety of your family members, loved ones. It's not easy to replace, but intentionally, again and again, replacing negative ones with the positive ones. Doing it once won't help much, but you have to do it again and again till it becomes a habit, till this new pattern takes itself instead of the old pattern, right? So that's the idea behind that example. Yes. Sonali, yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Bhante. One of my behaviors or flaw is also to do with the phone call, which has actually happened to me quite a few times. It's to do with my teenage daughter and going into house parties and pick up at a later time, quite a late hour in the night, which I have agreed with her. At this time, I will come. So you make sure that you come out. And then when I ring, she has not picked up quite often. So my thought pattern goes, she's ignoring my phone call. She doesn't care that I'm outside quite late, ready to pick her up. And then quite often after a party, I end up shouting at her because this whole thought pattern continues. But actually, sometimes she hasn't seen my phone call, or she has had the phone battery died or something like that. And maybe if I try to change it, it might improve in the future. That she has eventually come. She has never been later than 20 minutes. It's all worked out fine, but it's mostly my thought patterns end up her being quite upset and crying in the night because of this.
Yep, that's a good one. Yes, the behavior would be shouting at your daughter, right? I think these things, even Arosh mentioned it, it's good to, you know, get data from the history as well. Whether something has gone wrong in the history, or maybe, you know, she has always come one time, right? So that type of analysis would even help replacing these things with positive thoughts. But most of the time we get lost in the moment, and you know, the same old pattern continues. So you can see the idea is to reflect on ourselves and simply figure out your own behavioral patterns. Chamari, yes.
Thank you, Bhante. The trigger for me, the first one, loud noise from TV. It's usually my husband watching really, I don't know, horror films and stuff like that. And the thoughts are, oh, he doesn't care about the family, inconsiderate, showing his blind spots. I mean, there's a whole list I won't go through. And then the feelings, irritable, starting with irritable, and then it goes up to frustrated. And then the behavior, I can actually feel now the muscle contractions, the stressful muscle contractions in the body, streams of images, what I should do about it. And then a direct behavioral wise afterwards, if I'm still interacting with him, actually not interacting with him. So giving silent treatment. Now, this is actually an old pattern because I had trouble finding out. Of course, I have got really lots of other patterns, but none of it kind of came up with this flowchart. So for this one, what I've done is, what I now do is, perhaps enjoyment comes to him when the films are watched at a higher volume. This is his downtime, his me time. You know, the sound isn't so bad if I just go back to concentrating on what I'm doing, what I was doing. Looking at his good qualities, he's got so many good qualities, his love and care for the family, absolutely there. Don't be stingy with my kindness and patience. That's it.
Okay, thanks for sharing. So all of you have very nice patterns identified in your own analysis. So these things can really help us figure out our own self, figure out our own behaviors, and change them for the better. Especially when it comes to these family matters and things like that, we really can use our awareness, examine what is happening, and as a result, we can change it. But change won't happen suddenly. Change, you have to give it time, do the new pattern repetitively, and repetitively till it becomes a habit. That way only you can do the change, right? So this is an encouragement for you to analyze, examine your own behaviors and figure out what is happening. Figure out what's the cause. Figure out how it will change your thoughts. Figure out how feelings will change and how the behaviors will change as a result, right? So self-reflection is important. And with that self-reflection, you can change these behaviors for the better. I hope the idea is clear. This activity is just to give you a glimpse of this cognitive behavioral therapy. As I said earlier, we are not professionals, but in the point of view of mindfulness, we can analyze these things and we can, you know, talk. Right. I don't see any more hand. Yes, Arush.
Thank you, Bhante. I just also wanted to ask and highlight the aspect of reinforcing positive. I mean, this process, this analysis can help us identify existing positive behavior and reinforce that as well, I think. Because one of the other examples I had was a trigger where, as I'm driving, another driver lets me join at a junction, and the thought of that was kind of them and gratitude, and actually my looking for an opportunity to pay that forward by letting another driver further along my journey enter the road ahead of me as well. So there is that aspect as well, isn't there, Bhante?
Yes, the positive items are also there. With this, we can identify those things as well. Usually, the more focus is given to negative ones because that's where the improvement should come. And as you said, positive things, positive behaviors are there. And such a simple act can, you know, change your mentality, right? Instead of, you know, creating anger or rage in another driver, such a simple act can create a positive mentality in you. So you having that positive mentality might pay it forward, right? So that's how we should behave. That's how we should encourage. And if the world is like that, then it would be such a nice place. But most of the time, the tendency is towards the negative ones because those emotions, thoughts, they are so strong and they grab the hold of the person. Okay, with that, I think no more hands seen. So we'll finish the activity. And Sonali, you can take over.
Thank you, Bhante. It's such an interesting topic as well. A lot to learn today. So without any delay, I will invite Bhante Dhammakusala to start on today's topic, which we have already discussed, to start the talk on today's topic. Over to you, Bhante.
Okay, so you already know the topic that we are going to discuss. And in today's world, I think this is very much important because we are living so complicated lives. We have so many things in a daily routine and we are always rushing, trying to complete them, right? So these days in this new age, we are living complex lives. It's not that old. This change, this complex lives, it started maybe like 200, 300 years ago with the Industrial Revolution. The lives have become very complex. Prior to that, I don't think people, they have worked for so many hours. Prior to that, they had a lot of downtime. Prior to that, they had a lot of time to spend in nature or spend with family members. So only after this industrial revolution, about 200, 300 years ago, this trend started. And now it is becoming even more and more complex. You can see how technology is affecting it. We get all these devices, phones. Now, even in our activity discussion, the phone seems to be a major cause of anxiety because we can call the other person. If we don't have that ability, if we don't have that facility, then there's no way for us to, create that anxiety in us. Right? So you can see how the technology is taking or playing a big part in it. The more advanced these things become, initially we feel like they are making our lives easier. For example, phones, smartphones. It feels like they are making our lives easier. But in other ways, these things are making our lives even more complex. In other ways, these things are adding to the existing stack of anxiety. Right? So that you should reflect, that you should think about these technology, these things. They are creating even more complex lives. Now, even with these AI trends, it will be more and more complex. Right? It will be more and more complex. And that's where we are heading. That's where the humanity is heading. Right? So what happens is when these lives become complex, day by day, when we are spending so many hours trying to finish these things in our daily routine, right? We are always in a rush. We don't have time to self-reflect. And as a result, these behavioral patterns develop. As a result of unawareness, as a result of chaos, as a result of busyness in our lives, these behavioral patterns develop, right? So without you even knowing, they are acting in you, right? Those triggers happen. According to those triggers, the thoughts arise. Those thoughts will change your feelings, emotions. Then, as a result, certain behaviors are happening. And this is not happening just once. What is happening is that it is starting small, but gradually becoming stronger and stronger. Becoming harder and harder. That's how the mind works. That's how the brain works. So you can see we are always in a rush. In this rush, without us even knowing, there are certain behavioral patterns are developing in us. Right? So as I said earlier, the logic behind cognitive behavioral therapy is that the thoughts, the way you think, they will change your feelings and they will change your behaviors. That's the logic behind it. So when it says cognitive, there is a part of examining your thoughts. What are the thoughts that you are thinking? What type of thoughts that you are thinking? So you have to examine your thoughts, cognitive. Then behavioral, you have to examine your actions. what you say, or what you do due to that, right? Then therapy is simply changing it for the better. Even in today's activity, we touched on that, right? Analyzing your current behavior patterns and try to change them for the better, right? Try to find alternative ways to think. Okay, so that's the basic logic and idea behind it. So if negative thought patterns happen, negative behaviors, negative feelings are empowered. Time after time, those feelings, those behaviors are empowered. And more it happens, it becomes a habit and, you know, becoming harder and harder in you. But let's say if we can replace those things with positive ones, positive thoughts, positive behaviors, then what happens is that you can change these things for the better. Change is not easy because maybe those behaviors, they have been there for years. So change won't be easy. But gradually, little by little, you can change them. Little by little, you can replace those negative thoughts with the positive ones. Right? So that's the very idea behind this cognitive behavioral therapy. But we are talking about mindfulness. We are not professionals. Instead, we do meditation. So how can we relate this therapy into the practice that we are doing, right? So the main idea is that you examine your thoughts. You examine your actions. That's the foundation behind this therapy, right? So you have to be self-aware and see what thoughts you are thinking. You have to be self-aware and notice how you are behaving, right? So that's the foundation for whatever the changes that you can do in your life. So when it comes to mindfulness, that's our very practice. When we are mindful, we are noticing the thoughts that we are thinking. When we are mindful, we try to, you know, stop rushing and reflect on situations properly. In this new age, although things are always pressing, although you have to do so many things, it's important that you reflect properly. Only after proper reflection, you do things. Right, so that very self-awareness helps you to identify your own thoughts, helps you to identify your own behaviors. But in the mindful practice, we are not directly chasing after the thoughts. That change is there. Usually these therapy things, they try to chase after the thoughts. But what we do is, we try to anchor ourselves in a bodily sensation. Let's say observing your breath or being mindful of your feet or whatever the task you are doing, you try to anchor yourself into the bodily sensations. And what happens when you try to observe your breath? Time after time, certain thought patterns appear. Right? So our task is to observe the breathing, but as a byproduct, as a result of that task, we get to identify our thought patterns as well. And when we practice mindfulness, we can see what thoughts are frequent in us. Maybe someone is always fearful. There are thoughts related to fear. Maybe someone is always doubtful. Majority of thoughts are based on doubt. Right? So that way, although we are not directly chasing after the thoughts, when we practice time after time, what happens is, as a result of this mindful practice, you get to know your thoughts as well. And as a result of the mindful practice, let's say our daily lives, we try to be mindful. Now, when we hear the word meditation, most people think that it's basically sitting practice. That's the image that comes to our mind when we say meditation. But this mindful practice, that's the real meditation. And this meditation is not only during the sitting time. We do the walking practice as well. Those two are formal meditation, we say, we reserve some time and we do it. But the most important part of our practice is the daily mindfulness. You can call it mindful living. Mindful living, whatever the activities that you are doing, as long as you are living, as long as you are awake, you can practice it. And that is very much important when we talk about our own actions, what we do, right? When we do our walking sitting practice, we refrain from doing much. But in our daily behaviors, in our daily lives, we do so many things, we talk, right? So it's important that you be mindful during those activities. If you want to identify your behaviors, that's where you should pay more attention. And it's not easy to pay more attention during your daily lives because you are always in a rush. You have 101 things in your head, right? So it's not easy to be mindful. That's why we have to support our practice with the formal meditation. Every day we do at least like 30 minutes of sitting. We do at least like 30 minutes of walking. With that formal practice, we support our mindfulness. And when you do that support daily, little by little, the mindful living part will also become stronger. When we go to work, when we deal with other people, when we deal with our family members, that way, little by little, we are being mindful and we can develop that ability. It might take few months. It might take few months of little effort, but gradually you can develop that ability. And when that mindfulness comes, when mindful living is developing, you can really see your thoughts and your actions during those incidents. When I am talking to somebody, what are the thoughts that I am thinking? When I do certain things, what are the thoughts that are driving them? And how do I behave in these situations? Okay, little by little, you improve your mindfulness, and as a result, you can examine your thoughts and your actions better. Right? In your mindful practice, we don't try to replace them. Instead, we simply observe. We identify these negative thought patterns. We see how we are behaving negatively. And as a result, you can always replace those negative thoughts with positive ones. That possibility opens up to you. When you are mindful, when you know your thoughts, when you know your actions, there is always chance for change. Right? That change is encouraged. Even Buddha's path that changes and courage. When you think about eightfold path, you can see how those changes are encouraged. How positive thoughts are encouraged, how positive words, actions are encouraged. But you have to understand, in order for you to do these changes, the foundation is mindfulness. That's why we say when it comes to Eightfold Path, we can simply use the word mindfulness instead. We can simply say you can start practicing mindfulness, and as a result, the Eightfold Path will develop in you. Why? This mindfulness will examine your thoughts, your behaviors. There's an opportunity for you to replace those thoughts with positive ones. There's opportunity for you to replace those actions with positive ones. Right? So little by little, you can see how the very practice of mindfulness can influence us for better. Even the foreigners, they come and they practice. They haven't heard of the word Eightfold Path. But when they do the mindful practice, without them even knowing, they are in the Eightfold Path. Right? They use this very mindfulness to change their behaviors for the better. Right? So that way, when we practice mindfulness, we gradually develop our practice. We gradually go forward in the path towards peace. Right? So these therapies, although they are these new age things, when you think about the foundation of these therapies, the foundation is mindfulness. Without self-awareness, how can you examine your thoughts? Without self-awareness, how can you examine your behaviors? The therapist can help you, but they can't figure out your thoughts. You have to reflect on yourself and figure out yourself. The therapist can help you, but they can't figure out your behaviors. Right? So, with the very foundation of mindfulness, self-awareness, these positive changes can happen in your life. Right? So, maybe these therapies, when they were developed, those founders, they knew about the practice of mindfulness. And they used that very practice to change people's behaviors and to encourage people to do better in this life. Right? So, although this topic is somewhat strange, it's psychotherapy kind of a topic, but when we think about the practice of mindfulness, we can figure out the connections between two. How can we be self-aware of our thoughts? How can we be self-aware of our actions? And as a result, we can always replace those thoughts, those actions with positive ones. As I said earlier, you can always think happy thoughts, right? Even in Buddhist practices, there are always certain practices that encourage happy thoughts. Instead of anger, you practice metta, right? So that's replacing anger with a happy thought. Instead of developing certain thoughts, negative ones, you replace them with positive ones. Right? So that way, when we are aware, there's always opportunity for us to improve ourselves. But when it comes to practice of mindfulness, we have to go further. How to go further? Initially, you can replace these negative thought patterns with the positive ones. You can create some kind of a balanced mind. It might take some time, it might take a few months, but little by little, with practice, you can create some kind of a balanced mind. Those negative extremes, you can reduce them and replace them with little bit of positivity. But when it comes to mindfulness, after a certain point, we are encouraged not to follow either the negative thoughts or the positive ones. Right? That too is important. That's the real practice. That's the real practice. After a certain point, we don't try to encourage any thoughts. So that is not there in the therapy, right? That's not there in the therapy. That's unique to this Buddhist practice. Initially, you can use the negative ones to replace with the positive ones, right? Those changes you can do, but after a certain period, when you have a certain level of balanced mind, then you start, not encouraging either the positive or the negative thoughts. And that part is really important in the practice of mindfulness. Most of the practitioners, they can easily become mindful when it is negative. That's the norm. Right? We always think that when there's a bodily pain, we try to be mindful of the pain and the pain will disappear. But there is no guarantee that the pain will disappear. You can, of course, be mindful. But nobody is saying that I had comfortable feelings in my body. Right? Let's say, other example, when you are angry, you try to be mindful. You say, I tried to be mindful and noticed that I am angry and noticed how my thoughts, actions are changed due to that. So when it is negative, we usually get the idea of mindfulness. But let's say when it is positive, nobody is reporting about the happy moments. When I was excited, when I was happy, I tried to be mindful. And this is how I felt happiness in my body. This is how I behaved due to happiness. That part is usually not reported in those reflective reporting. Right? So it's important that we let go of both extremes. Positivity as well as negativity. Negative thoughts you have to let go, even the positive thoughts you have to let go. Negative feelings you have to let go, even the positive feelings you have to let go. That is very much important, right? If you want to develop the real practice, you have to go beyond the positivity and negativity, right? That's where the real practice is. So it is always encouraged for you to be mindful even during happy moments. Although there is no real urge to be mindful during those occasions, because the pain hurts, right? So when you feel pain, it's easier for you to be mindful because it hurts. But happiness is always comfortable, pleasing. So we forget the mindfulness during those moments. But the real practice, you have to be mindful during the happy occasions as well as unhappy occasions. That way, if you observe, then you are going beyond the positivity as well as negativity. Right? That's where the proper practice is. Little by little, after a certain period, we are not encouraging even the positive thoughts. We try to be mindful whether it's positive, we be mindful. Whether it's negative, we be mindful. That way only we can truly develop our practice. I hope you got the idea. So we will keep this topic for another week. And for today's talk, I think this is enough.
Thank you very much, Banthe. So next on the agenda are any reports that we have received, and if we have time for Q&A as well. To start this session, I invite Arosha.
Thank you very much, Sonali. With your permission, Bante, I will first remind all of us about the guide for mindfulness practice that we use for this program. And as I do so, I think Sonali will share it on the screen and put some information into the chat with the relevant links and so on. So the guide that we follow is based on first watching some instructional videos that give us an understanding of the basic practice for mindful walking and mindful sitting. And you can see the links to the two YouTube videos here, which will appear in the chat shortly. And having watched those videos, we advise that there's a small amount of time daily allocated to start practicing mindful sitting and mindful walking, and continuing with this for a few days until in total there's about 2 hours of practice of mindful walking and mindful sitting. And with this experience, we then invite you to write a experience report or a reflection report that summarizes what you felt, what you thought, how you found the experience of mindful walking and mindful sitting. You can describe the sensations of the texture of the ground, the pressure points on the soles of your feet, the shifting of body weight from one leg to another. For walking and for sitting, there might be sensations like pressure points, the parts of our body that touch the ground or touch the seat, as well as the sensations of breathing at the nostrils or the rising and falling of the abdomen and so on. And of course, there may be also thoughts that arise that you feel that are important to describe in your report. So once you've written that report, you can send it to us either using the Google form linked here or by email to beginnersnv@gmail.com. And those reports will be read out during the live session each Saturday. And Banthe will offer some guidance and advice on how to continue the mindfulness practice. And for even if you haven't sent in a report, listening to the experience of others is really beneficial and helpful to then take on board the advice and integrate that into our own practice. And so the final step is to continue the mindfulness practice according to the advice received during the sessions and continue in that journey. And finally, just to note that the recordings of the sessions are available on the Nisarana Vanaya website. So even in the event that you weren't able to attend when your report was read out, it's possible to find that in the recording. With that, I will now move on to reading the reports for today's session. Banthe, we have two reports today. I'll start reading the first report. Mindfulness in the day. It has been an interesting experience watching the calmness of the mind in the last 4 days, whilst supporting a daughter who went into labor and helping the family. She already has a two-year-old. A party had been arranged on the day Mum went into labor. I was called to look after the two-year-old, ensure the party went ahead, do the laundry, clean the house, bathe the toddler, put her to sleep, change sheets, etc., etc., in 3 hours before guests arrived. The drive, about 50 miles away to daughter's, was very calm, the mind ensuring some cooked food and other items for the party were not forgotten. Despite only 2 to 3 hours of sleep in the last 2 days since the baby was born, my mind calm, buoyant, no tiredness in mind, and incredible energy to ensure all the tasks that needed to be done happened. Happy throughout. When Mum was irritable, noted this was just a perception on her part to the speech, sounds, and arising of sound consciousness and her reaction to it. Neutral response in mind, whereas in the past there may have been anger or disappointment. Attempting to sit or walk formally whenever possible, even for short periods. The mind continues to stay happy with the feelings of metta to all family members. The benefits of the practice, helping in ordinary life, has become even more evident and inspiring to continue on this path. End of report.
Okay, right. Thanks for sharing that experience. Now you can see among the chaos, you can still be mindful and navigate those situations much better, right? So when we have this awareness, when we have that strength in us, no matter what is happening, we can simply go along with that. Usually what happens is worldly people, they don't have this ability. So they end up, you know, frustrated due to little things. You have so many things ongoing, plus you have a party as well. So they become overwhelmed by many things. Still they want to do all of them, but still they are overwhelmed, right? But the practitioner, they are somewhat, you know, calm in such situations. They know that these things are happening, but they focus on what matters and simply continue. They don't try to, you know, go against these worldly behaviors. They simply go along with it and do their part and simply be peaceful, contented in their own mind. Right, so this is the real gift that we can truly give somebody. Those little children, they are developing into a chaotic world. It will become more and more chaotic when they grow old. Right, so this is the real gift that you can give them. Even your daughter, they become frustrated due to these matters. You know, they are tired, they are exhausted. So this is the real gift that you can give to them. But the funny thing is that they are not ready to accept. Usually you have to be skillful giving the message to somebody else. The very first thing is to, you know, develop your own practice. And when you stay calm and composed in such situations, one day somebody might come to you and ask, what's your secret? They can even notice, little by little, they notice that this person is calm in the chaos. This person is composed in troubling situations. And one day they will come and ask, or one day an opportunity will open up. That's the opportunity, that's the day you can pass it along. Right, so keep on practicing, develop your own practice, and when an opportunity comes, this is the greatest gift one can give somebody else. This is the greatest gift to give a grandchild, This is the greatest property that you can pass to a child. But you have to wait till the proper opportunity. You have to develop your practice and the times will come, right? So we are happy about your progress. And imagine the practice becoming stronger and stronger. What will happen? You'll become more and more peaceful. You'll become more and more flexible, right? In your daily lives, you become more and more flexible. You don't go against those situations. Instead, you develop the ability to go with the flow. Imagine an enlightened person being in this society. We won't be able to identify them. Why? They are flexible. Right? They disappear into the society. They don't try to change them. They just simply go along with them. And they have the peace in their mind. Whatever the troubles, whatever the difficulties that come, still they'll be peaceful. Right? So, enlightened person, it would be very difficult to identify. We think that when somebody becomes enlightened, they should have some light emitting from them. And they should come and tell us that I am an arahant or something like that. Right? There are so many people out in the world who calls themselves arahants. Right? So that type of a message we are expecting to hear. But when you know the practice, you realize more the practice develops, more you disappear or more you blur into the society. You don't have a saying. You simply adjust according to the situations and simply go with the flow. So you can see it would be really hard to identify a truly enlightened person. They don't try to go against this process. Even let's say the next Buddha comes, I doubt whether we would be able to identify him. Even in the previous society, when the Buddha was alive, most people didn't recognize him as a Buddha. Right? Most people didn't recognize him. He was there in the society. There were other teachers as well. So some were following their teachings. Some were following Buddha's teachings. The mass society, they didn't identify the Buddha. Why? It would be very hard to identify. They are expecting a miracle. They want to see some light emitting from this person. But in reality, you become a commoner. You don't go against the flow of the world. Instead, you simply merge into it. Right? So you can see how the practice develops. You can see how your attitude is always changing. Right? So it's a good change. We encourage you to continue like this and let us know your progress again.
Thank you, Panthe. The second report begins, mindful walking. Walked outside at a faster pace due to making use of daily exercise as mindful walking. Attention spontaneously was with feet movements, weight shifting, quicker heartbeat, and arm movements. Observed how the walking continued in familiar surroundings. Sensation of chilly wind on face and hands. Few thoughts and images from recent events came up and passed away. Even when attention was on other objects, the walking continued without pause. Walked for 35 minutes. Felt much warmer and energetic afterwards. Mindfulness during the day. Last few days were useful in observing things that unite us and things that are different. Death of an uncle, a family friend, meant busy periods of travel and offering help. Uncle's family were shell-shocked with the death. Both sons blamed each other about which hospital they should have taken their father to save him, one mentioning he should have died instead of the dad. Uncle passed away, was 91 years of age, and the sons in their late 40s. A little surprise noted in mind regarding the avoidance of inevitable. All of us will experience death. In that we are united. Level of acceptance and preparation for death separate us. It felt like being with young children, although there was sufficient awareness not to say or do anything patronizing while helping. In contrast, a Dhamma friend who is helping with a newly born grandchild found the time to deal with so many things and even touched base to share her experience. Her mind surprised her with the calmness, energy, and peace that was there while helping through this busy period. She has years of practice, and this is a wonderful example of the benefits of that practice. Dear Bhante, look forward to your valuable feedback and immense gratitude for the practical guidance. Theruvan Saranai. The end of the report.
Okay, the walking, if I start there, it would be nice to, you know, walk a bit faster. So during the walking time, even the exercising is happening. And that's a nice practice. Might not work for everybody, but even myself, I usually walk a bit faster. And most people look at me and they say, Bhante, that's not meditation. Right? They think that I should walk slowly, mindfully, silently, I have to walk. And that's their idea. But we have our own pace in the body, right? So it's always good to find your natural rhythm. Allow yourself to walk in your natural rhythm. And when you practice, you realize it's not so hard. It's not so difficult. Although the pace is a bit higher, you're still able to be mindful. Right? So that way you can experiment with your own practice and figure out the best way. And some additional benefit, exercising your body as well. Right? So it's up to you. You can decide on your own practice. You can figure out, you can experiment with it, and you can figure out. Right? Some people, they drive fast, still have no accidents. Some people, they drive slow and have many accidents. Right? So you have to figure out your own practice, and whatever it is, if you are comfortable with it, it's fine. Even I myself, I walk a bit faster. That has some exercising effect as well. Plus, my natural rhythm is a bit faster. Right? So that way we can figure out our own practice, and always, you are always encouraged to do that. Then when it comes to the latter part of your report, it's nice to see how these people are behaving in such situations. You become the observer. You don't try to interfere with their behaviors. You don't try to show them the proper way. Instead, you are simply watching. And sometimes it's like watching a comedy movie, right? One person is saying, this hospital. The other person is saying, another hospital. That's their argument. They think that's how they can save their father. And they become emotional and, you know, say things like, you know, they should have died instead. Right? So this is how the world works. They are far from the reality of the world. They don't know the eternal death that everybody has to go through. Nobody is getting out of this alive. That's the reality. Right? So most people are lost. Most people are confused. These days, whole societies are confused with those wildfires. Even some people, they are starting wildfires, right? So they become destructive to their own society. They see the destruction and they want to become a part of it. The planes are crashing. People are confused. What is happening? And somebody was saying regarding this recent plane crash in DC, somebody was saying, well, what's the meaning of this life? So many young people have died in it. So many shining careers they have had, but they died in a young age. What's the meaning of this life? So they do question their lives, they do question what's happening. But the issue is that within couple of weeks they forget and they go back to their usual lifestyles. Again, after years, some reality check comes. Some incident happens, then again they think, what is happening? What's the meaning of this life? Again, couple of weeks, everything is forgotten. That's the worldly way, that's the worldly behavior. But the practitioner, they know that this is the eternal truth. Nobody is getting out of this alive. And it works according to the nature, according to the karma, right? So if we know that uncertainty, then you are encouraged to practice. You know, this is the reality of this world. While I'm at it, I have to practice, because we never know when our opportunity or the chance will come. We never know when our time will come. Right? So uncertainty is there. That uncertainty is an encouragement for us to practice more and more. Try to reserve some time in your daily lives for formal practice and try to continue for some time. That way, watching this world, becoming an observer for this world, we get more and more encouragement towards the practice. We see how worldly people are handling these situations. We see how they are reacting to those situations. Sometimes it's funny how those behaviors are, but you have to understand they are basically emotional. It's their thoughts, emotions that's driving them. You have to be compassionate towards them, because that's that they are lost. They don't know what to do, right? But this very observer, they are simply watching. They don't try to interfere with this world. It would be very an observation without interfering. It's like watching an accident that's happening. You don't try to interfere. Instead, you simply watch. That very watcher is the practice. So try to become the observer more and more in these situations. And that very observation tell you the reality of this world.
Thank you very much, Bhante. So that concludes the reports that have been received for today. We have a few minutes where we could take some questions and invite Bhante to give some further advice. So if anyone has a question, if you could raise your hand in Zoom, we will invite you to unmute and ask the question. It could be in relation to today's talk, in relation to your own practice, or what you have heard in response to the reports as well. I'll just give people a few minutes to think and raise their hand if they have a question. Yes, Sonali, go ahead.
It's in relation to today's exercise that we did, Bhante. I feel like sometimes I'm finding myself at the end of the flowchart quite often, more than at the beginning of the flowchart. So I'm almost have to work my way backwards. I have worked my way backwards to my feelings, but not towards the trigger as such. Sometimes I manage to stop myself and say I have these feelings now, but not really work my way all the way back to that. So quite often I only find myself at the bottom of the flowcharts, unfortunately.
Yep, and that happens. So that's a good observation about yourself. This is happening, right? It's not easy to catch these moments, especially when we are in our daily lives. It's not easy to catch these, and they don't give us prior warnings before coming, right? It's just happening. It's just happening. You find yourself at the end of the flow chart. That's what happens. Even these days, people, Buddhist, they talk about dependent origination, right? They have this flow chart, right? 12 steps. They have this flow chart. And they meditate on those things. Consciousness will give rise to this. Like that, they meditate, right? They figure out that, okay, I am, this is the first step, this is the second one, this is the third one. That way, they try to, you know, reflect. But in reality, that is not how it works, right? Dependent origination, it's that fast, that process is really fast. You can't really catch the middle steps. It's like you climb a tree and suddenly you slip, right? You won't be able to count the branches while falling. You remember you slip, you remember you are hitting the ground. You feel the pain, right? So that is the whole process of dependent origination. You slip and you feel the pain. Again, you slip, you feel the pain. That's the whole process, right? The steps in between, they go so fast. Again and again, you feel the pain and suffering. That result of that dependent origination, right? So same goes for these types. It's not always easy to catch the beginning of this flow chart while it is happening. Usually what happens is that afterwards we reflect and we try to find the way towards the root of it, right? It's very hard, difficult to catch the process red-handed. It's not easy. But what we are doing is we are supporting our mindfulness little by little. That's why even in the talk, I mentioned that it is important to do the formal practice. It is important to support your mindfulness like that. And gradually, with that stronger mindfulness, you go to your daily life. It's like going to a gym. You develop yourself, you strengthen yourself, you exercise. And as a result, your body becomes stronger and you can face day-to-day challenges with that stronger body much easily, right? You can run a marathon with that stronger body, right? But going to the gym is tiring. It is exhausting. It will feel like postponing. But it's important to do it if you want to develop those muscles and a stronger body. Same goes for the mindfulness. Daily practice is tiring. You feel like postponing. But you have to encourage your mindfulness daily with the formal practice. With that encouragement, the mindfulness will be stronger and stronger. And when it is stronger and stronger, one day you'll be able to catch this process red-handed. Little by little, you go towards the root of things. Now you are only catching the behaviors, but when you practice, after some time, you figure out you catch the feeling stage before the behavior. This is how I feel. I feel frustrated. I'm about to shout at my daughter, right? So that way you'll be able to catch at least the feeling stage. Then, with more practice, one day you will be able to catch the thoughts that are encouraging them. Right? And even with more practice, one day you will see this is triggering me. The problem with addictions or problem with habits is that they are happening without you even knowing. That's the addictions. It's like traveling on a highway. You don't have to put much effort. You simply go. Swiftly you go, right? But let's say some kind of a village road, it's always harder to travel on that, right? So our habits are like highways. They are well formed. In order for us to develop new habits, it takes so much effort. It takes time. But gradually we become better at it. That's the very idea of mindfulness. Today you make mistakes, you realize that you make mistakes. We don't try to get rid of those things. Those are important parts of the learning process. We make mistakes, tomorrow is a fresh day. Even as a monk, I make so many mistakes in my daily life. Right? But that's the nature of it. You don't become perfect suddenly because you shave your head. That's not how it happens. We all are humans, you know. It's the same mind. You can change your clothes, you can change the hairstyle, but the mind would be the same. Right? So you have to gradually support it. Gradually move towards little by little. Right? So that's why we say the practitioners, they have to be compassionate towards themselves. When you practice, you find a lot of your faults. And you are impatient with them. You try to get rid of them within a week, within a month. That's not how it works. So that's why you have to be patient. You have to be compassionate towards oneself. Gradually, you develop little by little. You give it time. And after a while, after a few months, after a few years, you realize, I truly have changed. Right? So that's how the true practice works. Right? So give it time. Support it with more formal practice. And little by little, you'll be able to go towards the those initial parts of that flowchart.
Thank you, Bhante. I can see the practice is helping me in terms of the problems are not escalated. So I've worked my way back and kind of stopped myself there. But like you said, with more practice, hopefully I will see more.
At least the behaviors are somewhat controlled. That's what happened. Yes. So that's progress. That's progress. There's always opportunity tomorrow to become better.
Thank you, Bhante.
Thank you very much, Bhante. And thank you, Sonali, for that question. I note that we are at the end of our allotted time for the session. And there are no other hands up to ask questions as well. So I will hand back to you, Sonali, to wrap up today's session.
Thank you, Arusha. I hope we have more time for questions next week. So we haven't had time for questions for a few weeks now. So hoping next week will, if you have any questions, please write to us. Maybe we can accommodate it at the end of reports next week. So with that, we have come to the end of another session. Thank you very much to our usual guide, Bhante Dhammakusala, who always advise us on this path and on the program. Not forgetting the chief abbot of Nisaranwanaya, Venerable Udayavirayagama Dhammajiva Mahathero, whose idea is to initiate this program. May these merits help them both to improve their own practice as well. Thank you to all the organizers who are working behind the scene, working really hard to make this happen. And thank you to everyone who participated today via Facebook, Zoom, or whoever may be watching later. As usual, we will have our next session at 1 p.m. Sri Lankan time. And I hope you can all join us. I hope you all have a happy and mindful week ahead. I will now end the session for everyone.